This episode is brought to you by Escape Makers On-Demand Agritourism Training. For more information, go to escapemaker.biz. That's escapemaker.biz.
This week, Team HRN is at Charleston Wine and Food for the fifth year in a row. So, on this week's Meet in Three, we bring you some of our favorite sound bites from last year.
The hospitality here and the camaraderie is really wonderful. Yes. That's what struck
Everybody
me.
Everybody smiles. Yep.
So, imagine if you mix dirt with sand.
Yes.
You've got our earth.
Yes.
That sounds like that would be really poor.
Really poor, right? You know, we can talk all we want about a good story, but a good story is useless if the wine isn't great.
It's highly Instagrammable. It looks so gory.
Tune in to Meet in Three, HRN's food news and storytelling roundup, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there, welcome to the Feed Feed, where we sit down with leaders and upstarts of the food media realm to discuss everything from navigating social media, building, engaging with, and growing a community, and producing content that resonates with young and old. I'm Jay Cohen, editorial director of the Feed Feed, the world's largest crowdsourced food publication and social media community, serving as your daily source of what to cook, bake, and drink. So today we are talking with two of our cherished Feed Feed editors. We have cookbook author and food writer Jesse Sheehan,
Hello, peeps. Well
as Jill Fergus of Feed the Swimmers, one of my favorite bloggers.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Jake.
It's so great to have you both here because you're both such active members of the Feed Feed community and kind of two of the people I got to know the best as I started with the company and really like embrace the ethos of community around what we do in connecting people through food. Before we dive in, because you're both here representing what I love, which is this conversation around how people can kind of jump into food and make it their career, not only like profit on it, but start to network using social media, kind of create a name for yourselves, which is what you both did. So to start, why don't we just go through how did you get into food? I know Jesse, like Jesse comes far away.
Jesse has a great story.
Yes, and there's a lot of Jewish geography of how we're connected through it as well,
okay.
Which is funny. But I'll let you explain.
Okay, so essentially, I did have a kind of circuitous. Thank you. Jill is going to help me speak through the podcast in case I have any trouble.
Perfect.
So I had kind of a funny road that got me here. I started out as an actress when I graduated from college. Then I became a lawyer. Then I became a stay-at-home mom. Then I started working in a bakery. And now I am a food writer and cookbook author. And essentially, after popping out my second little boy, and they are both delicious, now they're teenagers, they're less delicious, I realized that I actually wanted to be doing something outside of the house besides just taking care of my boys. Nothing against staying home with your kids, because that's awesome too. But for me, I needed to do something else. I had a voracious sweet tooth, although I did not know how to bake anything. And a friend of mine said, hey, you should go into that bakery in your neighborhood in Red Hook, Baked, and ask them if you can kind of learn the ropes. And I was like, brilliant idea. Walked in, terrified them, I think, from the initial my initial entry, because I was really enthusiastic. Hey, I want to work. What can I do for you? And they thought I was insane, because who does that in New York City?
Especially, and obviously not to shame you at all whatsoever, but how old were you when you did that?
Hello, like late 30s. I mean, they were just like, who's the old lady who has a couple kids? What is she doing in a bakery? And what does she think she can help us with? But they did take a chance on me, and I started working there. And essentially, first I was like an apprentice intern, and then they started paying me. And what was cool is the guys who own the bakery, Renato and Matt, started writing cookbooks. And they asked me to be their tester and then their developer. And then by the time they wrote their fourth book, I was writing, you know, I was developing many, many, many of the recipes in the book. So it was a great kind of first job, as it were, that led me not only into like the skills of how to work with flour, butter, and sugar, but also how to write and how to test and how to develop.
Amazing.
And that famous cereal bar that we love is yours, correct?
Yes.
Love it. And Jill.
Yes. Jake.
Tell me, how did it begin? Explain what Feed the Swimmers is.
Oh, okay. Well, my kids actually, until yesterday, were both swimmers. My daughter retired before she went to college, and my son had his very last swim meet of his career yesterday, which wrapped up last night. But long story short, I've always cooked since I'm a kid. My brother's a chef also, and we've both just spent all of our time in the kitchen. So fast forward, I cooked for everyone in college. I cooked for everyone in my 20s and, you know, shared recipes and, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say they were cooking lessons, but, you know, in sharing recipes, showed friends who didn't know how to cook how to do those things. And from there, they launched on, and they're all cooks now. And when the kids started swimming, I've always been big on nutrition and no processed food. So everyone always wanted to know what I was feeding my swimmers. What are you feeding swimmers? Or they'd have a great swim meet where they dropped a lot of time, which happens when you're very little. It doesn't happen when you're old. It happens when you're very little. And people would say, what did you feed the swimmers last night? And then the coach put me in charge of the team food when we traveled. And the joke was always, what are we feeding swimmers? So it started as a joke, like, you know, just sort of lighthearted. And the reason I started the Instagram wasn't to necessarily build a community. That wasn't in my mind. I was completely new to social media. It was simply to have a place to share recipes so I wasn't sending out, you know, 6 different emails every day. It was a place for everything to land, for ideas to land, not necessarily formal recipes, because I like to inspire people to not need a recipe. And so that's how it started. And then it just took off. Not instantly. It was a long, slow build, but it grew out of that.
I love it.
So.
When did you both kind of get involved with Feed? Obviously, you're both, we love like our editor community because we have these incredible voices within the food world spread throughout the actual world. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it's such an interesting conversation when we begin of like the, when you got involved to where you are now, because so many of our editors, like, or people that we've worked with, we started working when they had just like a few followers or just doing one thing. Then all of a sudden, like, they explode.
Yeah. I had a very small account at the time but a passion for cooking and sharing it. And, I met Julie and Molly at the Union Square Farmers Market and we started talking. And then I would run into Julie a few other times and we sat down at coffee one morning and I just asked, I said, you know, I'd love to be one of your editors. And Molly got in touch with me and she said, we need a salmon editor. And I said, that couldn't be more perfect because that's kind of like my family's favorite food group. So it just, again, it was just, you know, you meet someone and you smile and you say hi and it opens up doors. Like, I really believe that.
That is very true.
You know,
true.
You say,
that
hi, nice to true. Meet you. My name is Jill, and I think I follow you on Instagram. Or, hi, nice to meet you. I love what you do. And you make a friend. You know, that's all it really takes is a smile and, you know, appreciation.
For sure.
I might not be smiling enough then.
Oh my gosh. Because
I don't have the numbers in my Instagram.
No, but you do have a cult following. Oh. I feel like, well, to know you is to like be obsessed with you.
Oh, I love you.
And especially around the food world. So first let's talk about how did you first get involved with
food? I think I must have stumbled upon it on Instagram because I remember just reaching out to, like, you know, I don't even know what the info at feed, whatever the email was that I found on the website. And Molly got, actually, you know who got back to me? Do you remember that woman? She's in Canada.
Yes.
I can't think of her name, but she's lovely. She was working for the Feed then. And she got back in touch with me immediately and said, yes, you can be an editor. And then I think she gave me to Molly, and Molly gave me the Icebox Cake Feed, which was brilliant because my first book is about icebox cakes. And then the Brown Sugar Feed because I love baking with brown sugar. And it sort of started that way. And I remember back in the day, because this was so long ago, that I just like email Molly like, hey, want me to edit? What do you need me to do? And for a long time, the site was under construction.
Yeah,
do you
yeah,
remember?
Yeah, yeah.
It preceded you.
It was before my time.
It was before
yeah.
Jake. But there was a time when you would be like desperate to edit something. And they were just kind of trying to, FeedFeed was trying to figure out the best way to work with the editors and the recipes. But I was desperate. And then slowly after doing that, I can't even remember when I went to my first event.
I think we met at that one. Yeah. That's when you and I met.
Yeah. Yeah. And I met Hedy. Yeah. It was great.
Amazing. So now, obviously, fast forward, you're both having relatively incredibly successful careers. We were talking before about numbers, and you made the comment like, oh, well, I might not have the numbers. But I find, especially like at Friendsgiving, where we have editors at any publication, when they see you, they like claw onto you. And maybe it's because you just like talk a lot of shit and like people love to gossip.
I have a potty mouth.
And always a big smile on your face.
That's true.
Jesse's the best.
What was the process in terms of kind of then transitioning from working for Baked and kind of being the behind the scenes person of their books to then pitching your own, just because like obviously you've written now two books that are incredible. Talk through what that was like.
Sure. So it was. I'm just gonna say it. It was. Yes, I'm a talented person, but it was luck. It really truly was. Because I had met Matt and Otto and started working with them, I was introduced to people in their agency and a literary agency who now is my agent. Said to me, you know, what about if you call this woman that we know that wants to write this book about icebox cakes and give her a call and see what she's up to? And I did that. I think one thing I will say that I am good at is hustling. And so if somebody offers me an opportunity, even if I'm not positive about what shape it's going to take, I go for it. And so I contacted that woman. She said, yeah, I want to write a book about icebox cakes. Why don't you develop the recipes for me? And the rest was history. So that sort of almost like fell into my lap. I know for a fact that that doesn't always happen that way. But from there, you know, it was funny when icebox cakes launched in 2015 and I had to start an Instagram account. Because I didn't have one. Like that, social media, as we all know, just wasn't quite as prevalent and important in terms of building a brand 5 years ago. So I started an Instagram then, sort of even behind those peeps who already had accounts just because, you know, people were playing around with it. And then I think the second thing that happened is, you know, I published my first book with Chronicle and my second, The Vintage Baker, and Once I submitted that proposal and sold that to Chronicle, you know, the importance of the brand for the individual person, whether you were an author, a recipe developer, a food writer, was becoming more. I mean, now we take that for granted that everybody has to have a brand, and we talk about people having unique voices. Mm-hmm. And if anyone ever asks me advice, I'm sure you say the same thing, Jake. It's like, be yourself, but put your personality out there. Don't try to be anybody else.
Yeah, authenticity reigns supreme.
Yes. And that is exactly, I think I started to realize, like, I know I was a little anxious when my book in 2018 launched, and like, it was the first time I'd done a lot of TV stuff or video stuff, and I was a little apprehensive about what that was going to be like, and then I realized, like, oh yeah, like, I mean, it sounds so cliche, like your mom would say this in seventh grade, but be yourself.
But it's true. And then, like, I picture, like, you just did the live with Julie in, like, a pink corduroy jumpsuit as you're just, like, chill, completely unfazed by anything.
100%. 100%. So that's all. I think that is about focusing on a brand that is you. And then as long as you're comfortable in the you thing and you put that out there, people are going to respond to that.
Yeah. Jill.
Yes.
We talk about kind of this idea of a personal brand. And one thing that I always notice from you, because you've built like a wonderful account.
Oh, thank you.
It's gorgeous, beautifully curated.
Thank you very much.
But one of the things that I also notice is that you have the most thoughtful comments on every person's account across Instagram. So every food writer, publication, always, what is kind of the thought process behind that? How do you think that's impacted like your steady growth of your account?
It's hard to say what grows the account and what doesn't grow the account. Because, you know, we can all complain about algorithms and what this, that, the other thing. And it seems to go in fits and starts. But I genuinely feel like I'm part of a community. And so much so that it's spilled into real life. So these friends are not virtual anymore. I've met so many of them. And everyone is exactly who they put themselves out mm-hmm. to be, which is wonderful. So I just feel it's like another group of friends. So, you know, I like to support my friends. I like to talk to my friends. I like to, you know, I think it's just part of participating in a community. If that makes
perfect
not
sense.
To oversimplify it, but that's really all it is. I really enjoy having those connections with people, those who I've had the opportunity to meet and those who I hope to meet one day soon.
I love it.
That's the best way to describe it.
And now let's kind of get into like the next stage, which is you've built up this account, obviously mm-hmm. Instagram, beautiful. You're making all these connections. Mm-hmm. Something that we've kind of in personal conversations discussed is like that concept of then how do you translate social media or like clout mm-hmm. virtually into something that's concrete, and typically that would be
a book or a
byline on a publication. Exactly. I would say even before we get into books, let's talk about like pitching, because I just think you've done incredible things with Washington Post. It's like Food 52.
Jessie is the queen of pitching. I'm gonna learn lessons from Jessie, but I hit a little bit of a pause button in the past year and a half. You know, my son was sick, so mm-hmm. we focused on that. So I went back to Instagram and social media being that, taking a few little jobs or assignments here and there, but really keeping things more quiet. And now I'm getting, you know, now I'm back into it. So I will be pitching ideas. I do want to write for you, for other members of the community, and I want to fine-tune an idea for a cookbook which features what I love to do. I don't want to offer out a different category of food or type of food to the world.
I mean, that goes with the whole conversation about authenticity. Yeah.
Exactly. But I also, you know, a lot of what I cook is very similar to a lot of other people cook. It's, you know, so I want to find a way to capture an audience that needs what I want to say.
Yeah.
Maybe it's empty nesting, you know, two swimmers and all of their friends is a hell of a lot of food to be cooking, you know? So even when I was recipe developing and playing on Instagram, there was always someone to eat everything I was experimenting with. And now it's Joe and I, you know, that's a lot less food, like exponentially less food. I was going to Whole Foods every day when my kids were home and buying a gallon of milk and another two dozen eggs along with everything else. And now, you know, I could go a couple of weeks and not walk in unless I want to work on something and I don't have the ingredients in the house.
I do love that perspective.
So I also cooking like for that two empty is, nesters cookbook.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like I made this wonderful seafood stew a couple of weeks ago. Some of it's in the freezer. But then a couple of days later, I turned, you know, you just kind of had to make a dish, which is not easy to make just for two. But then you can get three more meals out of it easily, and it reinvents itself. So
maybe something that. Like,
we'll see. I'm trying to figure that one out.
Jesse, when you are pitching, what is that process like? Mm-hmm. Talk through, like, get real.
I'm going to get real. This is, I think, kind of an insane story. Jake will have to cut me off if it's, like, not as great as I think it is. So this is insane. Jill and I were leaving a Food 52 party in December. A woman was coming in the door. We kind of helped her get through the door. Somehow it came out that she worked at Dwell and that we were food writers. And I said, here's my business card. And she said, great, here's mine. The next day, I emailed her. I said, hey, I mean, guys, you have to understand, I don't even like have an aesthetic. Like, I don't have anything to do with Dwell. But I thought, oh, here's a magazine. I should write for them. So anyway, I wrote to her the next day. She wrote me right back. She connected me with the editor at Dwell. The editor at Dwell wrote to me and said, any ideas? I was like, what the, you know the word I want to use, but I'm not going to use it because you can't be naughty on a podcast. And I started racking my brain, like, what, you know, she was saying, like, food and aesthetics, how can you combine them? And I was like, oh, God, I'm not aesthetic. I take the worst.
You are aesthetic. Well, oh, my God. I love it.
Anyway, I have a really nice house in Brooklyn. And so I pitched that. I said, what about a story about me and my house with, like, me baking and, like, my pit bull? And I sent her the photos, and she loved it. And I just have a piece and Dwell online. Like,
that's awesome.
That's insane, right? I bumped into her in a doorway.
But it's not, because that's how, and I think it truly is, and it's unfortunate because it does create this barrier of entry based on location. Mm-hmm. Because I do find that one of the most important things is FaceTime, especially with editors, because I've both been an editor myself, mm-hmm. In addition to a time when I was freelance and then all of a sudden having to pitch, and it's night and day.
You mean if you're doing it just like via...
If I am the one who is assigning out articles versus when I'm the one pitching myself. And I've been in both situations.
Yeah.
And I do think that the concept of events and showing up and saying yes, and all of a sudden you start to create these relationships with people that get to know you, and until they get to know you, sometimes like a pitch is just like an idea. And so often, like, ideas are great, but that's not what people are looking for these days on any food publication. We've said authenticity or unique voices a million times, and until an editor can understand what yours is, they can't really
exactly
visualize what that story would look like. Mm-hmm. So I get that completely, and I think that's something that's been so huge and important when it comes to kind of starting to show up and you talk about like you, I mean, not to totally just like put everything out there, but like IACP, where we were in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was that. And then all of a sudden it's like, great. Now you are writing for the Washington Post.
Yeah. 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 No, I mean, it's just, it is, you have to be slightly fearless, don't you think? Mm-hmm. Because it's can be a little humiliating, and of course you get rejected. But, you know, if I meet somebody that whose publication I think I might want to write for or liked well, I don't even know if I want to write for them, but I think I do, I will usually try to, you know, talk to that person and find out if it's okay if I shoot them an email. I'm also very good about follow-up.
Very good.
A lot, yes. I know, as Jake including, well knows.
She sent me one this morning, and it was so great because I was like, oh, perfect. I'm going to see her today, and we can discuss it, get something set up.
But I'm really good about, sometimes I worry, I always want to actually ask editors how frequently you should follow up, but if I know the editor that I'm pitching, I'll follow up in a week, maybe two, but I keep on people where I have friends who are food writers who say to me, oh my God, if I don't hear back, I assume they didn't like the idea. And I'm like,
No, you have to
most
check
of the time
your shy
they're just
the door.
They're just buried. Yeah. I get a million emails, and most of the time, like, one is great and it gets completely lost, or I see it and I'm like, great, but it's not necessarily as like time sensitive. I do think that that is also a very common misconception, where there are also moments where I see an email and I immediately respond because it's like, that's incredible. Yeah. That needs to happen. And then there are also moments where there are ideas that are just as incredible that take 2 weeks to get around to. And it's terrible. It's not necessarily good form, but it's also sometimes just the reality of...
There's only so much bandwidth. There's only so much time in the
day. Yes, yes, yes.
But I find you have to like check your shy at the door.
Yes.
And
I always say shame is the only thing that will hold you back in
exactly.
life.
Exactly. And if your fear of getting rejected, well, a rejection, just go for it. So big deal. Like... One rejection isn't worse than another, and if you respond and follow up, so you find out sooner. Like, it's not a problem.
How do you both feel in the sense of when we then pivot this conversation to it's you are pitching yourself and your unique voice? A rejection then can often be taken very personally. While like an idea, it's like, all right, they don't want that idea, they don't want that recipe, fine. But it's like, no, they don't want me. And sometimes that's something that definitely has to be balanced, because you have to remember that it's you have to stick to yourself, you have to be like you can't let any of that stuff faze you.
I feel that particularly if you pitch new like TV, like anything where you're going to be on it.
Video.
And they say no, it feels a little bit more painful to me in a way, because it feels like a rejection of me. However, that part of all of this world is I think more based on popularity, and you know, it's harder to break in. I think it's easier to break in writing a recipe or a piece in a magazine in the food world. Do you agree? Than like getting yourself on the Today Show, a Good Morning.
Oh, 100%.
So those, in some ways, those little moments where you get on TV or do something like that feel like big wins. because that is a little bit harder to do. The only other thing, just to throw in like a little dose of like sad reality, the bummer about all this, because I do write for a lot of different people right now, it's not the most lucrative way to make to make it in this food world. And I do less of kind of the branded content, sponsored post kind of thing. And when I have done that, that's lucrative. So it's hard to figure out how to, it's hard to figure out how to pay the bills, as it were.
Funny enough, that's actually going to be the next topic of discussion, but we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Escape Makers On-Demand Agritourism Training. Did you know that every $1 invested in tourism marketing returns on average $3 to $8 back? Not a bad ROI. Learn how to grow your agritourism business via 12 workshops entirely women-led. These training workshops are on demand and can be downloaded at any time. The local travel landscape is rapidly changing to meet the demands of the leisure, event, and corporate travel sectors. Whether you're a farmer or producer, a winemaker, a restaurateur, or a destination marketing organization, there's more opportunity than ever to capture these markets. The on-demand agritourism training will provide you with insights and skills to keep your target demographic coming back for more. 14 speakers providing 6+ hours of education that you can watch at your convenience, anytime, on any device. Maximize your time, budget, and resources, and focus on creative solutions to help your business thrive. Presented by Escape Maker and Fulton Stall Market, the full conference access pass is now available to purchase. Use the code HERITAGE2020 for $50 off a full pass at checkout. For more information and to purchase your pass, go to escapemaker.biz. That's escapemaker.biz.
So we want to talk monetization. Obviously, this is an industry. That's everyone wants to do what they love, but at the end of the day, you also have responsibilities and bills to pay and a million one things going on. What has been your experiences with, obviously, like, I can speak from experience, like editorial will never pay as much as sponsored.
No, but it does get your name out there.
Correct.
And it gets
it
your
value.
It makes your voice heard. And it's, I think it's just as important as the social media piece.
Yes. But what is the conversation then that you're having with yourself of how much do I do of both? Because a lot of times people will be like, I am only going to do editorial. I would never do branded work.
You can't say that anymore. It's many eggs. It's, you know, you have to spread it out.
Yes.
You can't bank on one thing. We all know, you know, you don't put all your eggs in one basket, not to sound so cliche. But one of the things about branded content, which I think is very important, I find in the past several months I've turned a lot away because they're just not things I use. I respect them. They're nice products, but I don't want to offer branded content on my blog or Instagram that isn't something that's genuinely active in my home.
100%. Because then it feels inauthentic.
Exactly. It would be much more lucrative to take it all on, but then I think you just dilute your whole voice. I think it dilutes everything, and it becomes joyless.
Yeah.
One of the most important things about pursuing this line of work is it's pursuing a passion. And I need to keep that in there. So I'm still learning my balance. You know, I still feel like I have a door to push open.
How do you kind of pick a brand? Are you reaching out to brands that you want to work with that you're already using? Or are they reaching out to you or some combination?
I've done a minimal amount of pitching. So people have reached out to me. I've worked with a lot of brands through you guys.
Yes.
And they're wonderful brands that I definitely...
Because that's our ethos, is we would only partner with a brand that we are already using in our test kitchen.
Yeah. And one of the things that actually thrilled my son, he loves Blue Corn Chips, and I'm not going to mention any brands on the podcast, but that company reached out to me and they said, you know, will you do a giveaway for us? And I said, well, you have no idea how many bags of your chips are in my pantry.
That's the best, but that's so
It was perfect. It was, I was happy to do it. It was wonderful. Working on everything for them felt good. And, you know, it's happy, happy, joy, joy. Like, yes. It sounds so trite, but...
But that's kind of like, for example, you both were on our Hanson Brook farm trip.
That was wonderful.
Which is wonderful. Amazing. But that's like, you think about working with a brand that you know the product, we use the product.
Integrity.
I know the company. Oh. Anat has now become like family. Like all of this stuff. And that is kind of the future of what branded content is becoming. There's the concept of advertorial. It's still an ad, but it's... has an editorial spin to it.
Yeah, and pasteurized eggs. It's so important to pursue that in with climate change and health and nutrition and, you know, avoiding slaughterhouses and unethical breeding practices and all of that stuff. So it was joyful. And I had no idea what to expect from a chicken farm. And we had a blast.
It was really fun.
Jesse, now you do a lot of pitching.
Yes.
We talk a lot about for like concept, what is the ratio of what an editorial recipe would pay versus a sponsored?
Oh my gosh, like no comparison. I would say I'm going to go with a quarter of the amount.
That's about the same for me as well.
But I just want to say that I think because of numbers, which is fine and legit, and also Jill, if I'm sure you're all following her, but if you are not, she has the most beautiful feed. I mean, I have a very nice feed. I'm not going to throw myself under the bus.
It's beautiful. No, I love
your feed. But I want to eat everything.
But
I don't.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't get approached. I mean, I think I could probably count on one hand. No, I know I can count on one hand how many sponsored posts I've done. And one was great, like Eagle Brand condensed milk. I love,
which is perfect. But that's also perfect on brand
fit
of what
for me. So that was perfect. Kind of spacing on like the other two or three. But long story short, it's just it hasn't been part of what my thing has been. And at first, I won't lie, was like upset about that, trying to figure out how I can make it. And I've kind of shifted away from that a little bit. Like I'm feel so busy right now with just the writing that I'm doing and the developing I'm doing that I was like, I'm not even sure I should put that on my plate as well. Because it's a little square peg, round hole kind of situation for me. The pressure of taking the perfect picture with the can in the back, that doesn't come naturally to me.
Yeah.
So it and that probably shows in the picture that I then make for the brand. But I would say financially, that's not very smart of me because that's where 100% where the money is. And I would also say, like, doing TV for the most of the time, you're not paid because they see it as an opportunity.
Correct.
For you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm just going to come right out and say it. I have like paid to go to Los Angeles to have the opportunity to be on various TV shows. And I think it gives people have the illusion like, Jesse, oh my God, you're amazing. They're flying you across the country. They're not. But, you know, that's a choice that I'm making as I try to build my brand.
I mean, I think that's an important realization that a lot of people definitely always think that this is this like glamorous life, especially even just to have a byline in a prominent magazine,
right,
or publication. Like, it's great. You start to see either your recipes or
feeling.
Your face printed. Yeah. And it's gorgeous. And then you remember it's like they paid you not a crazy amount for the amount of work that you pour into it because of the fact that it's so important to put yourself, your best self out there, especially when given a platform like that.
Yeah.
Turning out work for someone else is very stressful.
Yeah.
So even though you love what you're doing, the dynamic is completely different. It's completely different. And also, I don't know about... I think Jesse's in the same boat. We're one-girl shows. Like, I don't have an intern. I don't have an assistant. I don't have a staff. You know, at the end of the day, I'm doing the dishes. And it's a lot of time. It's a lot of time. So it's trying to find balance to make it all work so that you give 100% of yourself to each project you decide to take on.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about cookbooks, cookbook proposals, like all of that. What has gone into that? What is kind of your thoughts in the sense of how you approach kind of thinking about the next project, what to take on, and how you prepare yourself and your brand for it?
Sure. So for better or for worse, that's like, and both Jake and Jill know this, that's like the goal for me. Like, no, I'm not wanting, like, dreaming about a Netflix TV show or the Hallmark
show. We would have a lot of that. We would have a lot of fun with three of us.
But what I'm really always dreaming about is a cookbook. For me, that's just the, that's the thing that I, like, that's what I, that's why I do everything else, is so that I can write another cookbook. So editors who are listening, work for publishers, hello. But anyway, and so everything I do is for that. I would say in the 5 years since Icebox Cake was published in like April of 2015, I can't believe how things have changed. I feel like it was easier a few years ago to have an idea for a sweets and baking book and get that book published. Maybe I also got lucky, but I do, it does seem to be harder now.
It is.
And I feel like I have an idea that I really love that I'm kind of trying to make work, and it's hard. And I think publishers are wary, at least for baking and baking books, are wary about that. I think perhaps they're a little less popular than books that are savory. And I also think that the environment, it's more flooded now, maybe, than it was. One thing I will say about book proposals, as Jake well knows, they take an incredible amount of time. There's usually some rejection involved.
It's mostly rejection. We had Adina Sussman and Raquel Pelzel on, and I remember...
I love listening to that.
I remember when I wrote my first proposal, I actually got on the phone with Raquel, and she told me that... the story of her first proposal and getting rejected. And then, of course, my first proposal got rejected by everyone. Yeah. And then, again, you forget about it when you change it or tweak it or write a new one. And then all of a sudden, everyone's fighting for it. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, okay, not so bad, worth it. Yeah. But the amount of time and work that goes into a proposal, a lot of people don't realize. It's not just jotting down a few ideas. It's writing about 40 pages of...
Yeah.
What is the concept? Why should you write it? How would you market it? What are the table of contents? What are 10 example recipes?
And demographics. Who will it appeal to? Why will they buy it?
Who will it appeal to? 100%.
And who you know in the industry.
And who you know in the industry. All of that. And then at the end of the day, they can say no. And all that time and energy is gone.
Yeah.
For no money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It takes, I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like, I think it's the writer in me, because that's what I love. Like, yeah, I worked on my proposal with my agent. I have a great agent, and she was very involved. But we worked on it for a really long time. So it's hard. And I think maybe, I don't know, would you say that everyone, that's their goal to write a book? I don't know.
Not always.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's something I've always wanted to do. So that's the hurdle I'm going to attack next.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, times are changing. And as you both know, in terms of the landscape of food media, from when you started to now, where we're discussing about you coming and doing TikToks with us.
I know.
Which I can't wait. It's going to happen. Yes, oh, yes.
I've been playing with that idea I had for you with the explosion. So.
Amazing. I can't wait to see it.
I can't get the timing right, but I'm working on it.
Timing is everything.
But here's a question for you, okay? We know the demographics of TikTok.
Yes.
If all of a sudden I pop up with TikToks, are the kids going to run? Or are they going to be like, no, I want to see what you
do? No, you're the boomer who's making cakes or salmon on TikTok. The whole idea is you can still be authentically yourself and position it to a different demographic. People, if you then try to be like, I don't know, like I'm picturing Jesse kind of very much naturally has that like Amy Poehler, Mean Girls, like mom personality. Mm-hmm. So like her being on TikTok is the same her, right. just to a different audience.
Yeah, we're very silly in our household.
And so that's it. And that's it.
It's all about having, if you're not having fun, don't do it.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're going to get into our lightning round now, which is my favorite part of the podcast. So to start... who do you love to follow right now? Who's killing it on the gram?
Oh my goodness. It's all about who makes me hungry in the moment. So I would say, even though I don't eat a lot of meat and I don't eat chicken, I don't eat poultry, pinch of yum, hungry, like everything they do. Videos are concise and wonderful. God, there are so many. I love Husbands That Cook.
Yes.
I love them. I love them personally. We've met, like, they're the two of the so nicest sweet. People I've ever met. And their food also. Everything is delicious. God, I could keep going. I love Amisha at the Jam Lab. Her things are beautiful. I love Jessie's baked goods.
Yes.
And having baked a lot of Jessie's recipes, they all work. Mm. If she says it's going to be easy and you can knock it out in a few minutes in one bowl, I'm telling you, that is so true. Even when we've been in situations where I haven't had access to kitchen tools other than like a bowl and a wooden spoon, guess what? I go to Jessie. And, you know.
Honey, I love you.
It's true. I'm not lying.
She's
it's
slipping
totally
her
true.
$5 bill yeah, on the table right now.
I could go on. There are many, many, many.
I think that's
dishing
perfect.
Out health. Actually, I love what Jamie cooks because I find it so similar to what I cook. And so frequently she's made something and I'm like, oh my God, I just made that last night. Like, so.
Amazing.
It's just what I want to eat in the moment.
Good.
You know, and I find it all very inspiring. That's what I love most about scrolling through everyone's accounts.
Yeah. Jesse?
Well, I love, of course, I love Jake's feed, I love Jill's feed, and I love all the beautiful food, but I'm going to say that what I really love is when somebody is hilarious.
Yes.
Humor is everything.
So you guys your puns.
But humor, I think humor is what pushes, when we talk about like personality or voice,
100%.
Like humor is the future of food, it's the future of almost everything. Why? Because there used to be this idea that if you only could have clout if you took yourself very seriously, right, and now right, it's
the opposite. So I love Alison Robicelli. Not only is she a fantastic food writer, and so read everything she writes because it's so hilarious. Yes. She has a great podcast, and just
funny enough, I'm not mad at her, but like she just came out with this recipe that was already handed in my manuscript.
Oh, no.
I'm still gonna keep it because it's right. great, but it's for a matzah tiramisu.
Oh my God.
And it was just the fact that we both thought of it and called it tiramisu was so funny.
That
because
so
I originally
funny.
Got the idea from Julie, who does a version for her kids.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
What's the when you soak it in the egg and you make the
matzo brei.
Yeah.
Different.
You know, I know, but that same soaking, like,
yes,
is that coffee, what inspired you to soak the matzo?
No, all right, it's a long story. Julie, I posted this matzo icebox cake, funny enough.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to Julie around Passover once. She said, oh, you posted that and it inspired me to make this for my kids. And now that I make it for them every year. And I think she calls it the kids call it matzah masu or something like that. And then I heard that. I was like, that's such a great idea. And then when I was playing around with ideas for the
it's
book,
brilliant.
It was
you,
just
like,
natural.
Just dip the in espresso?
In coffee and Kahlua.
Amazing. That sounds so good. So anyway, Alison Robicelli is hilarious and I love her. And I can't remember what she had. Something about her. Sometimes they're cats. I won't lie. I'm not a huge cat person, sorry Allison, but she's still hilarious.
Yes, I love that. When's the last time you both really impressed yourself with a recipe you developed?
Sometimes it's the informal things that aren't recipes.
Name it.
Well, the two things I cooked recently, I made a sweet potato black bean chili.
Yum.
That was chili one night, and the next night it went on nachos, and then the next night it went into rice and grain, you know, grain bowls. And there was the seafood stew, which day two went on top of a basic risotto, and I have backups in the freezer. So those two things, they were so good to eat and so nourishing and warming and, you know.
This is kind of funny, and it sounds like I'm like trying to kiss Feed's butt, but it's true. I did Instagram Live in the LA Feed kitchen with Julie last week, and we made a cake for my book, The Vintage Baker. We made the Devil's Food sheet cake with seafoam frosting. Do you have that where you haven't made a recipe of yours in years, and then you make it, and you're like, I'm a genius.
That's a great recipe.
It was so delicious, yeah. And I loved
it. And the seafoam frosting with the extra sugar on top.
Yes.
And the recipe is on the Feed if you want.
Actually, funny enough, we got some really great videos after you left, so I think we're gonna post that.
Yay.
I know at least on TikTok.
Okay.
We got some really good ones at Dan Tuck.
And you know what I did love doing? The video for the stuffed squash blossoms.
Those were gorgeous. They did so well.
I That's one of my favorite things to eat also. I love making those.
What's the last disaster? Like total disaster in the kitchen?
Oh, I have to think about that.
I have them all the time, first of all. So it's funny that I can't think of it. I'm trying to think what I've been developing recently. Well, I mean, I'm working on some buttermilk donuts right now for the kitchen, and I think I have them where I want them to be, but I'll just like go a little meta for a second. It's just hard when you think you're like an expert and you think you should be really good at this, and then you develop something which isn't that. It's not even a yeasted donut, it's like a cake donut, but it was a little, the batter was like a little bit too wet, and I wasn't sure if I could add more flour. It was just, I felt silly that I couldn't figure out what was wrong, and I did.
But that's it. That's what happens. Yeah. A lot of trial. And then there are times when you have to walk away. Yes. And sometimes it comes back to you in a year. Sometimes it's gone forever.
Yes, 100%.
I actually had a mishap this weekend. I'm the queen of setting a timer, like especially eggs, everything's timers. I didn't set a timer. I popped some really delicious local Great Barrington sourdough bread. I sliced it thin. I was going to make some bruschetta and some crisp bread. Well, I popped it under the broiler and forgot about it. And we invited some swim parents over. So I had a big bag of burnt Christine. but you know, mishaps happen all the time, and sometimes they turn into wonderful things. There was a birthday cake I made, and I, you know, took it out of the pan and it broke to pieces. Well, it all got glued back together with the frosting and crumb coat, and no one was the wiser, and the kids were thrilled because there was so much frosting in that cake. So
frosting is my favorite.
Yeah, it's things like that. I love frosting.
What's really exciting you in the food space right now? It could be an ingredient, a cuisine, a person, a publication, anything.
Wow.
That's a hard one. I mean,
that's a really hard one.
I wouldn't say it's really, really exciting because I haven't started yet, but Jake, who I really trust and admire, is all about TikTok, and I'm going to say it on the radio so it happens. I really want to do TikTok. I think it is the right medium for me. So I'm going to say,
I'm going to say TikTok.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's very exciting to start something new because a lot of everything feels the same.
Yes.
And TikTok is the first new thing.
Well, it's
to
the
come
Wild West.
The
and it I think in the same way,
that's
like
the best feeling,
it was
though.
Instagram, it was blogging, all of these things at one point where anyone could do it and you could create an incredibly impactful voice.
It is all about that Wild West feeling. I mean, that sense of adventure and really and starting out when you really don't know what you're doing. You know, that to me, that's exciting and fresh and new and fun and full of laughter.
I can't wait for you to be replying to these children leaving comments. They all want to say first. That's what they comment on all of it because they want to be the first one to comment on your video.
Yeah.
And then they start saying things that you just. I can't wait to read your comments.
I miss being surrounded by children.
Oh, there you go. I mean, this is the perfect thing of like,
love.
You're an empty nester, so you're now on TikTok.
when the kids would all come over and hang out, I was in heaven. I loved it.
Amazing. Okay, and my favorite question, we're playing Fuck, Marry, Kill. You knew it was coming.
Yep, we did.
So for Jesse, your options are fudge, American buttercream, and one bowl cakes.
Ooh, that's really good. Okay, so I'm definitely going to kill fudge.
Oh, wow. Weirdly, you make great fudge.
I make good fudge, and I don't tell. I don't really like fudge, so there's that. So definitely fudge is getting killed. I think I have to marry one. Was it one bowl baking or one bowl cakes? I got to marry one because I am like one bowl till the day I die. But American buttercream, fully fucking American buttercream. Okay, 120%.
Love it. And then Jill,
I'm scared.
Have matcha, tahini, and dukkha, which I feel like are some of the three motifs in all your recipes.
Yes,
that I love.
I bake with a lot of matcha. Oh my goodness,
that's a good one.
I can't kill one of those, but I have to kill one, don't I?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to marry tahini. I'm going to kill matcha. And I'm going to fuck the Duca.
There you go. Amazing.
And I apologize to Majo.
I never expected people get very, very heated with this question in terms of trying to figure it out.
Matcha, I do drink a lot of matcha, but I also, in cooking, use it very specifically. You know, it's limited. So that's why we're going to let it rest in peace.
Gotcha. When I first pitched it, I got this question being like, you're not like using food people for this question, correct? It's like, no, foods only. But luckily we got there.
Oh my God.
The last question, just to wrap this beautiful conversation about what it's like to not only kind of build up a career in food media, but survive and thrive as these freelance stars that you both are. What do you want to see for your careers in the next few years?
Great question. I mean, I sort of already said it, but I want to write another cookbook, and then I want to write another one after that. Like, that's definitely amazing. Where I know you're supposed to like see it, because then it'll happen. So I'm just going to say that's what I see happening.
And again, cookbook's at the top of the list. And I'd also just like to get more involved in editorial. Just put more out there. I don't think people should take themselves too seriously in the kitchen. I don't think if they're new to the kitchen, they should be intimidated by the kitchen. And I think you just have to dive in and be willing to make mistakes. So I want to share that. So I'm going to go with book and editorial.
Are you going to keep Feed the Swimmers, or now that they're gone, are you going to pivot to
something else? Was thinking about that last night, but for now I'm going to keep it. At some point, I'm sure I'll switch to my name. But at the moment, I'm fond of it. It was, you know, this weekend was very emotional for everybody. So, wonderful. But it came to a very happy close. So, and we're very proud of him.
Well, thank you all for coming, and thanks everyone for listening. First off, Feed the Swimmers, Jesse Sheehan Bakes. Follow them on Instagram. Thank you, Jake. Not going to regret it.
And follow Jake Cohen.
I mean, we'll get to that. Okay. To learn more about the food and drink discovery platform that is the FeedFeed, head to thefeedfeed.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at thefeedfeed and myself at Jay Cohen. If you have a tip on who the next social media culinary star will be, send us a DM. We will see you next time. The FeedFeed is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.